Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest speaking to us from his office is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. And if you've got a question for him, you can call that in to area code 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. Very good.
Thanks for being with us, as always. Let me get right to a listener question that's come in to us from Stephanie since the last time we spoke. And she says, I know the sidewalk issue at West Wabash Avenue and Schenck Road is not at the top of your very long list, but can you consider it? She says, many people walk this hill to get to the trail, and just yesterday I had to call the police on someone driving so close to me they almost hit me. We have had this talk before, and you didn't seem worried. I know we're trying to make Crawfordsville beautiful, she says, but what about safe?
Yeah, that's an interesting area, kind of bordering some areas that are in the city and some areas that are not in the city. And as I always tell everyone, sidewalks are an issue in our community, largely because of the ordinances, the way they exist, leaving them up to the responsibility of the property owner. So that is an area that we will definitely look at. I think what she's mostly referring to is not necessarily the condition of the sidewalk, but the lack of sidewalks in that particular area. And most of that particular road with Schenck Road, most of it is in the county and not in the city, which makes it a little more challenging and problematic for us. But I am confident that we have a plan in place. We're doing some annexation in that area and the extension of the Sugar Creek Trail. We will be reworking that area and accommodating some of those issues to make it more pedestrian friendly.
Are some of those issues some of the ones that are easier to fix? Because if you're talking about, a curb on a sidewalk, that's a smaller project. It's not something where you would necessarily have to tear up the whole thing. Or is she right that those tend to get pushed down the list because they are not, in many cases, the huge projects that have giant impact on people?
Well, we like to tackle as many of the small things as we can because obviously they're much easier to deal with and to make things happen, and we do tackle a lot of smaller issues. So I don't think it's really that size is what determines this. It's really logistically what can we do in some cases, and in a case like that, it's very tricky because, like I said, part of it's in the city, part of it's not. But also, if you're going to come in and put sidewalks where they do not exist, you're going to take somebody's property away, and so you need to think through that. Some of those homes are very close to the road, very close to the street, so. It's not as easy as it appears to be on the surface. There's a lot of things to consider.
Do you think somebody who owns one of those houses would fight you about putting in a sidewalk in front of their house?
Well, I don't know specifically, but I can tell you that oftentimes that is the case. People don't want those amenities in front of their home. They don't want people walking, a few feet from their front window. So, again, a lot to think about there, but we will definitely take a look at that area. As we go through some of these next steps to make it more pedestrian friendly.
You and I have been talking for quite a while about your ongoing conversations with Walmart about a road specifically which is near their store on the south end of town, and it seems that you have finally reached a deal, I understand?
Well, we have. We were able to sign some agreements last week, and we've come to terms on us purchasing the existing private roadway and the land we need to connect it to the new roadway that the county has constructed. So there is some confusion in the public, I think. A lot of times I hear people say, well, we just need to buy the little strip of land to connect it, and that's not the case. I don't think most people realize the existing roadway from 231 near the Culver's all the way back to the back of Walmart is a private roadway, and we needed that roadway. We needed to purchase it. So we're purchasing it for less than the appraised value. A lot of work, between us and Walmart. And in all honesty, the local Walmart store and the folks representing Walmart in Indiana understood the importance of this project and making it happen. So Walmart has internally approved that agreement, and we're in the process of closing right now.
You mentioned the importance of making this happen, and it occurred to me as I was thinking of questions for you this morning, I'm not sure I've ever asked you why this road is so gosh darn important in the first place.
Well, it's an area that as progress happened, and a lot of progress has happened on the south side over the last several decades, there wasn't much planning and forethought put into it. So you see a lot of dead-end roads and a lot of developments that start and stop and things like that. This takes a lot of pressure off of County Road 150 South, which runs alongside Crawfordsville High School. It's a residential street. high school students coming and going, and a lot of this cut-through traffic from State Road 47, if you will, is channeled across that roadway, and it's just not equipped to handle it. It's not a safe situation. Also, the way the Walmart Plaza was constructed, it was always envisioned that this would be opened and connected. Right now, you have a real bottleneck in that area with basically one way in, one way out, and we get some serious problems there. So this will help with traffic flow, help with public safety. We also have the Ironman Raceway in that vicinity. This will help ease the traffic flow there and open it up in that regard as well.
What, from going through this process, do you think that you learned that you might take with you into future negotiations, particularly negotiations with businesses and businesses that may be well-heeled like Walmart is?
Well, I'm not sure I can walk away with one overarching thing, but you just have to go into this knowing that these things are going to take a while, and I'm not sure the public always understands that. They think you can pick up the phone and talk to the head person at Walmart, and these are mega corporations with many different divisions. And in our case, we were dealing with legal counsel in their real estate division, and the challenging part was there was a pretty constant turnover of personnel. So we would maybe negotiate with somebody for a few months, and then they're out of the picture, and then we start over and start the process again. So it's very challenging. It takes a lot of patience and it takes a lot of time. There was a temptation. There was a lot of outcry in our community several times saying, let's be more aggressive with this. Let's beat up on Walmart, if you will, and do some things like that. But for me, it was a matter of balance and earning their trust and their respect, and understanding that while they have a retail presence here, they also, on the other side of our city, are one of our best employers with the Walmart Optical Center. Those are very good jobs, very well-paid, high-tech jobs, manufacturing eyeglasses for Walmart stores. So, we wanted to respect that, and we wanted to keep a very good relationship with them.
There, you mentioned the idea that some people in the public had said of, well, why not come down hard on Walmart? And so you're balancing your relationship with the company versus your relationship with your constituents. And that made me wonder if this was, in some part, a test of your leadership that you really wanted to pass after a while, because this thing took a couple of years to talk about. Is that true? I mean, was it that you sort of didn't want to be seen as somebody whom a major corporation could bully? You wanted to be seen as somebody who was going to kind of navigate what was some tough waters to get this done. Did you ever envision it that way?
No, I didn't envision it that way. I do take all these matters very seriously. And as we move through a process, and this is an example, there are oftentimes we have members of the team negotiating, and this was one of those situations that, I finally come to the conclusion, if this is going to get done, I have to step up, roll up my sleeves, and make it happen. And I don't know if it was a test of my leadership more than a test of my patience some days, but, it is a matter of, I feel like I've been hired to negotiate on behalf of the people of this community and to represent them, and I will certainly give that the best of my ability every single time. But, in these larger negotiations, and we've had to negotiate with several big players, you have to kind of put yourself in their on their side of the table sometimes. And I really try to do that and understand how they are approaching this and understand their concerns, and then really start to eat away at those. And I think that helped us in this case.
Nonetheless, though, isn't it important for you as somebody who might think about re-election in a couple of years to have a resume of dealing with businesses where you can say that, you may not call it a win necessarily, but you can say, I have successfully negotiated with these big companies and thus hire me for another 4 years? I mean, isn't that potentially a benefit to you?
Well, I look at it and say, I want to do what's best. And if that means I get hired again for 4 more years, then so be it. And if the people look at it and say, you didn't get a good enough deal, that's possible as well. I suppose there could be some criticism and people saying, we should have acquired this for nothing. Or the most common myth was we can just take it under eminent domain, which is not the case. It is what it is. And like I said, I feel like I'm hired to represent people. And if they approve of what I've done, then that's great. And if not, You know, that's unfortunate. They probably don't understand all the dynamics involved in these kinds of things.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, and we'd like your questions for him. Call 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, your city's Board of Works has already done something that West Lafayette's is set to meet and do this Saturday, and that's try to write some restrictions that would disallow cell phone towers from kind of being built willy-nilly in your city and others. Let's talk a little bit about the Senate bill that made this possible. Came in near the end of session. Had you been made aware of it before it was passed and put through in the last days of the session?
We had been monitoring this throughout the session, and Accelerate Indiana Municipalities, or AIM, used to be called IACT, kind of watches these things on our behalf and advocates on our behalf and lobbying at times. They had been monitoring this very closely. A lot of the mayors in the state had gathered throughout the session to discuss this particular bill and some others, but this one in particular. It was very concerning to us. We really worked hard to try to find a reasonable solution and tame down some of what was in the original version. But the final version that came out in the end, the Enrolled Act, had some surprises in it that I think caught a lot of people off guard, and we wanted to make sure we got out ahead of it. I think this particular bill is atrocious. I'll just say it, and I know there will be people disagree with me. This is passed off as making Indiana more marketable for 5G and for IT and for high tech and data transfer and all those kinds of things. And that's not what this is about. We can do those things now. These large cell phone companies can do those things now. They want a way to circumvent any local input and to do this as cheaply as they can for the benefit of their shareholders. So they can put these things up the right way, they can do it the right way, and they can comply with what the local residents want to keep our communities looking nice, or they can come in willy-nilly and do the cheap route and maximize their profits.
What were some of the provisions that caught you by surprise in the bill that finally passed?
Well, they did relent and give us a little bit of local control, but they set a deadline of May 1st, 2017. And you first see that, you think, wait a minute, this is a typo, or I'm not reading this correctly.
So in other words, 2 weeks after the session ended.
2 weeks after the session. And for most people, about a week, I read that particular piece early this week. So that doesn't give you much time in the government world to really react, keeping in mind that we're also under the open door laws. So it's not like we can say, hey, we read this, we're going to have a meeting this afternoon, and we're going to address this. You have the 48 hours business or 48 hours of notice for an open door meeting, and you have all those things to think about. They really tied our hands on this issue.
Do you think that provision that, hey, you have a little bit of time to write your own regulations was just perfunctory so that someone could say, look, we gave you a chance?
Well, I guess. I mean, maybe they were trying to say, if you already have some things in place, you're covered. And if not, too bad for you. I'm not sure what the rationale was behind there, but I can certainly tell you on the surface it does not look good, and it does not look like the state legislature is even remotely considering the impact this will have on local communities.
What sorts of local regulations are you hoping to enact?
Well, what we've done is, we have certain districts throughout our community that already restrict power poles and overhead utilities. So we included those as restricted area. We have a downtown historical district that already regulates those issues. We expanded that out to include our entire downtown. The irony is we are spending, millions of dollars. We're assisted by the state of Indiana through Stellar, spending millions of dollars to make our downtown look good. At the same time, we already had a request from one of these large companies to put a 100-foot utility pole in the heart of our downtown with these cell phone pieces on top, and I don't understand the technology, but I can tell you it looked absolutely terrible. All that we're doing could turn right around and be erased by allowing these companies to put these anywhere they want. And that's what the legislation does. It largely gives these large companies the ability to come in and just do it however they want to do it, do whatever's cheapest for them, and totally disregard input from the local citizenry.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you see this affecting the whole city or just densely populated areas?
Well, my understanding early on was that it could, in theory, affect everywhere. They could put these every few feet, every few blocks, if you will. I don't know that that's what it will come to, but we do know at this point, we think we've put the protections in place to make sure these are put strategically and they're not just, for example, the company that wanted to put this had never visited Crawfordsville. They picked a point on the map. That's where they wanted to put this. It was near one of our historic structures. There's not going to be much thought put into this. It's kind of just, we're going to put these where we can and whatever's cheapest and maximize the profit for our shareholders and go on.
It would seem like if you happen to be a municipality that was in a, let's say your elevation is greater than those around you, you could have a proliferation of that, everybody coming in and putting up a number of towers to say, look, we've got this high hill that makes it easier to broadcast the signal out as far as we want to go.
I don't know that that's the issue with these. These are short range. I don't think these broadcasts, these supplement, from what I understand, the large towers. And this gets you handle some of the local data. So in your densely populated areas, some of your areas that aren't being served well by the big towers, these are very important. And we certainly want progress and we want high-speed data. I mean, there's no doubt about that. That's critical for our future. But it can be done in the right way, or it can be done in which we just allow these big mega corporations to do whatever they want. And I don't think that's in our best interest.
Has your city been in contact with other cities? Like I say, I know West Lafayette's Board of Public Works is going to have an emergency meeting on this coming up in a couple of days. Have you had conversations?
Well, I myself have not. I believe our legal department has, and I know they were scrambling to put this together. And I know they had reached out to some other communities, and I'm guessing at this point some other communities have reached out to us because as of last night, I think we were the only community that had reacted to the legislation. Now, I know there are others that are in the process, and there were some communities who had done things, a month or two ago as well. But, and then I guess also we have to consider this has not been signed into law yet, as far as I know. So we'll have to see what the governor does with it, and I hope that he looks at it and sees it for what it is and does not sign it, but we'll see what happens.
So I started looking into it a little bit this morning, and the law, which was authored by State Senators Brant Hirschman and Jim Merritt, comes after Senator Hirschman in 2016 received at least 8 different contributions to his campaign fund, totaling almost $7,000 from telecommunications companies and their lobbying arms. Senator Merritt got about $3,000, and so close to $10,000 between them for the two Senate authors of this law. Does that seem fishy to you?
Well, it's always difficult. I mean, I often find myself, on the other side. I mean, you have to campaign, you have to raise money. I think you have to look and see if that stands out as something abnormal. Did they not get these donations from these groups prior to this being considered and this is something new, then perhaps it's something that should raise some eyebrows. If they've always gotten support across the board from these groups and nothing changed, then maybe it's not something quite as alarming. But, you always wonder what's going on when these really large groups bring these issues forwards. I'll be honest, I shake my head a lot of times at things that happen in the state legislature. I want to know that our representatives go over there and remember that they're in our case from Crawfordsville or Montgomery County or wherever, and represent our interests. And there are so many dynamics going on at the State House. I think that gets lost sometimes.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We've got about 10 minutes left with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. We'd love to have more of your questions on the show today. Call 765-496-1999. Send emails to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I didn't get a chance to talk to you about this last month, but I wanted to bring up the caucus for electing new chairpeople to the County Republican Party. And listeners to this show will remember our conversation from last year about the former party chair who left to run the County Libertarian Party because he felt that your sort of more moderate wing of the party was not conservative enough for his liking. How did the most recent leadership election turn out, do you think? Is your more moderate side of the party kind of trying to consolidate power?
Well, I don't know if there's an effort to consolidate power. That sounds a little scary, but I think there's an effort going on to really have a good conversation and realize that, you know, at the end of the day, we all have to come together, talk about our different viewpoints, and find that common ground and work to move our community forward, whether that's from the party perspective or from local government perspective. And I think the fact that we elected party leadership in all those top positions recently, they were all unopposed, speaks volumes. I think that right there tells you that we have done a good job of coming together and really discussing our differences and really trying to work to move things forward. That is not to say that we agree on everything. We absolutely do not. I'll be the first to tell you that. But we are trying to work together to move things forward. And I think some of the people, some of the players involved that were maybe more divisive that worked to kind of keep things split up have been removed from the picture, and so now we'll all work together. At least it looks that way.
Was it important to you to remove whatever obstacles there were, whatever possible starters to those kind of squabbles were hanging around?
Well, it was important to get, I think for me, to get everybody to see that that's what was occurring. You know, I'm not out to remove things or people, but to really call attention to the fact that, hey, you know, 80% of us, 90% of us in this room are trying to discuss this and move forward and find solutions. And there's one or two people over here that just constantly are keeping that from happening. And when you start pointing that out, other people start to see it.
I noticed that there's a Tea Party meeting scheduled for this evening in Crawfordsville, and you represent, I think it's fair to say, a more moderate wing of the Republican Party than most Tea Party conservatives do, and you represent someone who wants to kind of work across the aisle. So I wonder, do you think that the continued existence, the continued meeting of the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, people who sent at the highest levels people to Washington who shut down the government for a short time a couple of years ago, is that a threat or a hindrance to the way you would like to see decisions made and politics practiced in Montgomery County?
Well, I don't think it's a threat or a hindrance. I think, you know, every group is certainly open to meet and discuss their views and their ideas. The fact that they still have meetings is really irrelevant to me. If they want to come together and discuss their thoughts, I think you have to look at the size of those meetings. When those other groups meet, those meetings are pretty small. There's not a lot of people involved in those. And you just want to make sure that they have, at least for me, they have the facts before them. Because as I've noticed a lot of times in some of these meetings, there's a lot of things being discussed that's just not factual. And so, you know, anytime I've been around, my goal is to say, well, hang on, let's put the facts on the table. You can go check these for yourself. This is what the law says. These are the facts and figures. You can pull them from the publicly available data and dispel a lot of the rumors and myths, because a lot of things really take off and get fueled by inaccurate information.
A couple other things in just our last 4 minutes or so. You had another one of your sessions this week where the public could come and meet you and ask some questions one-on-one, and it seemed to me that it had been a long time since I'd asked you about one of these, and a lot of things have happened in your community in the last 12 to 18 months. What sorts of questions did you get this week?
You know, I don't get a lot of questions. I do believe the listener was there to ask about the sidewalk, so I'd already addressed that. But, you know, typically what happens in those particular sessions is that people come and they want an update. They want me to walk through where we're at with various projects and various things that are going on, if you will. So, you know, inevitably, you know, what's going on in the Walmart negotiations? What's going on with the Ben Hur building? What's going on, you know, with the trail projects and the Stellar projects and Fusion 54 and some of those kind of things. So
we've got to get these people to listen to this show, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So that's typically how those go. And this one actually was very well attended. It was one of our parks. And there were some questions about our construction projects this summer. timetables, how's that going to work, what's going to happen, those kind of things. So I answered those.
Anything that people were particularly effusive about, either positive or negative this time around?
No, not really. It was pretty much the standard question update type session. So nothing really standing out. There is some, concern in this community. There's a rezone coming before city council next month that has some people outside the city asking some questions. And they're good questions. And we have a meeting plan to kind of work through some solutions there. And so I get that question a lot, but I did not receive it at the community forum.
You and I were talking before the show today, and you mentioned that you've got a meeting that's going on tomorrow to talk about how your city is going to try to set up its youth council. What do you hope to get out of that meeting?
Well, what we hope to get is involvement and input from our young people. We're updating our comprehensive plan right now, and we involved high school students in that process. That had never been done. But if you think about it, we are creating a plan that largely they will be implementing. Then, in a few years, they will be living and working and raising families, and it's very important that they're involved. And they certainly provided us with a different perspective. So we hope creating this council will really start to give us some input and some insight into what it really takes to create a community in which young people want to stay here.
And you, of course, are trying to lure more young professionals to your community, as we've talked about a lot through Stellar and other things. Is some part of this an outreach effort to the young people who you think might become the future pillars of the community to say, your hometown's pretty good, you might want to hang around a while?
That's absolutely what it's about. Absolutely. And as I work to fill spots on boards and commissions, and we've worked to find people to run for office and get involved, we need to reach out to that younger generation and pull them into the process. And that's part of what this is about, is starting equipping them to understand the process and become involved. And I'm very excited. This is an exciting time in our community because we have some really good, interesting things in the works right now, kind of behind the scenes, that will start to roll out this summer. And it's about attacking those core issues and creating the retail and the shopping and the housing and the quality of life in a community that will keep people here.
It would seem like you would need these students to do a couple of things. One, you need them to buy into the idea that they could be running the city themselves someday. And then two, once they buy in, you need them to tell their friends.
No, that's part of it. We talk about keeping or getting young people into our downtown. Well, when we're sitting around trying to plan that, I'm not sure we understand what we're trying to plan. But if they tell us what it takes, that's coming straight from the horse's mouth, and it's very valuable. And it is word of mouth as they go back and tell their friends, hey, we have some input and we can be involved in this. And, don't just sit and complain about it and say, I'm out of here as soon as I graduate. Stop and think about it. This is our community. It's ours. It's theirs. And they need to be involved.
And lastly, how quickly do you hope to have the council up and running and giving you input?
Well, we definitely want to have it up and running by the next school year. So in the fall, August, or somewhere in that time frame, I think we'll be ready to go by then.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, that's the time we've got. We thank you, as always, for your time, and look forward to chatting with you probably a couple of times in the next month, I have a feeling.
Very good. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember that all of these shows are archived at our website, WBAA.org. Be with us next week for our conversation with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. You can email questions in advance of that program to ask@WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.